And we're going to go to Ecclesiastes 9, and we're going to go back to verse 10 because that was the verse that we ended on last week, and I wanted to read it again because it makes a lot of sense. And this is Solomon talking about man in his end, or toward his end. And so it says this, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. Amen. So I think the big thing from this verse for me was is to do it while you're able to do it and while God has given you the time to do these things. Because quite often, and this has involved me more times than one, especially with my family and with my dad. My dad began to ask questions about mystery truth. And I said, well, let's get together and sit down and talk about it, Dad. And 2 weeks later, his kidneys quit on him. And we couldn't get him down and get him cleaned out, cleared out. And so they just had to withdraw food from him. And it took him about 22 days, but he starved to death. And I never did get the opportunity to do that. So I'm looking at this, and when the questions get asked, maybe that's the time to do it, to say something and to get involved and to not put it off till next week or next month. And I had a friend of mine that his wife passed away, and he was a good customer of mine. And, I called him up because I was working, at the time I was working down at Michelin down in Sandy Springs with Daniel. And he said, Cease, will you come by and see me? I got something I want to talk to you about. And I said, well, and I was building my house. And I put him off for 3 or 4 days. And so when I picked up the paper 3 days later, I saw his obituary in the paper, and he was about ready to give me 6 acres of land down on the lake. Now it's worth $3 million. But the Lord evidently knew that I didn't need it. And so I didn't get it. But that's okay. And I don't worry about it. I don't, very seldom do I think about it. But, you know, those kind of things do crop up in your mind sometimes. So, chapter 9, we're going to start with verse 11. And this is study 13, and today's date is the 27th of June, 2018. And as I said, tomorrow, again, it's my birthday, and we'll just let that go as it is right now. And the verse is 11 from chapter 9. Through verse 15 of chapter 10, in the Companion Bible is Solomon's personal inspections, and it goes with wisdom and man, wisdom and man, right on down. And it seems like, you know, it goes from verse to verse and it alternates, repeatedly back and forth. And so it says this, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happeneth to them all. So this kind of carries on with what we opened with there about the time that you're able to do and the time that becomes open for God's work to happen in our lives. And I think that's a very important situation there. So he says, in this personal inspection, he says, I, Solomon, returned. He said, I have, my mind has drifted back to personal thoughts as I go through this. And Solomon often does this. He seems to go back and reflect upon what he has seen and what has happened to him. So these personal thoughts, he said, went back to the personal thoughts and saw under the sun, or upon the earth, if you will, that the race or the speed, here he's talking about a race run. And you can run races or you can do races in many ways, but he mentions the swiftness here of a race. So the race is not to the swift, nor the battle or the warfare is to the strong. And we sometimes think, well, that's kind of a misnomer that usually if you run in a race, you're in it to win. But that may not be the case. You know, we talk about Paul and what he wrote in Philippians, early in Philippians. He was talking about wanting to accomplish an out resurrection like the Lord had. And certainly, that wasn't an endurance of speed. It was an endurance of a will to acquire something that seemed to be unobtainable in that sense. So you got, you got there that when you read this about the speed and the warfare, then you have to think about it in some other forms, in that sense. And it says, neither yet bread or food to the wise. And generally when you talk about bread, it's not only talking about bread as we know bread, but food as that staff of life that we need to sustain ourselves with. Nor yet riches, he says, or wealth to men. And that man there is the word gibor, and it means ruddy or red-faced man. Because that the ruddiness in man, or that redness in man, represented by the blood that God has given him and he has in his being in that sense. So to men of understanding, you know, if something goes wrong with your brain a little bit, and in this age and time, we know it pretty much as Alzheimer's to the extent, but You know, and a lot of times that is a blood condition that the brain has been, the blood has been taken away from a part of the brain, which it kind of slows it down or stops it from working like it's supposed to work. And so that is, that's the ruddy red face part of that. And it says, nor yet favor or preference to men of skill, which we're talking here about arts and crafts. So, you know, if you don't have the brain flow of blood, then you don't have understanding, things that you've done all your life, you're not capable of doing them in that sense, you know, there's no real preference there, but it's something that man thinks he's going to be able to do from the time he learns these things until he goes to the grave, but sometimes that just doesn't happen. And it seems like it's getting more and more prevalent as we go along. But he says this, but time and chance. And if you look up or come to an understanding of time and chance, and most of the time it's misfortune. It's something that happens that changes your ability to do things. And it's generally associated with calamity of some sort or evil of some sort. So, you know, if you want to look at that as being misfortune associated with calamity or evil, he says that happeneth to all. There's nobody, I don't think, that gets picked out of this. I think it's just a common factor of life and death.
Do you think that's a statement of admission by God that there are times when he just allows things to happen?
Yeah, I've always thought that bad things happen to good people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't see any judgment involved with that. I think it's just things that happen. I don't see that God uses that as a judgment in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody gets Alzheimer's, I think it's a bloodborne thing that keeps your brain from being able to function the way it's supposed to function.
Yeah.
There ain't not anything much you can do about it. Not yet.
Yeah.
I'm always open, but not yet. Because I've seen that certainly happen with my wife and your mother.
Yep.
So,
grandma.
And yeah, especially grandma, because it seemed to work on her, you know, big time. It says, for man in verse 12, for man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in a snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. So, 12 here is the situation that sometimes man gets snared by the ignorance that befalls him, because sometimes he just, especially, he doesn't heed the things that God has asked man to do and the way that man should live in that situation. And man himself, he kind of looks in ignorance the other way, and you know, that can then get you involved too. But let's just break it down a little bit. Man snared by ignorance, if you want to, for man snared by ignorance, if you want to use that, also knoweth not his time. He don't know his numbers of days. As there are like the fishes that are taken in an evil net or in man's trap. And, you know, when man throws his net, he's expecting to catch fish. I remember when Peter and them went out and fished all night. Jesus came up. So many words, he said, how'd it go? He said, well, we didn't catch anything. He said, well, cast your net right over here. And there was more, as many as they could drag in.
Get them out of the water.
Yeah. And so it says, and as the birds that are caught in the snare or trapped, and they're snared by ignorance also many times. And, you know, and I think about birds. When I think about birds, I also think about chickens. And, that's a bird that I guess man has domesticated over the time. And my grandmother would raise chickens, and she would raise young roosters, and didn't have any need but for one rooster, so the rest of them were food. And she had a wire that had been bent, and it had a crook on it, and she would throw out a little corn, and the chickens would peck, the corn, and they'd get closer and closer and closer. And she'd ease that wire out there. She'd pick out the one that she wanted. And a lot of times, you know, she didn't have to wait till the preacher come because she was married to one. And so, I kind of make fun of that a little bit, but that's kind of the way it was. But she could, catch that chicken by the leg and,
couldn't get away.
And, you know, and do her thing with it. But, until the chicken was caught, he didn't know anything was going on. So as the sons of man snare or trapped, traps birds in an evil time, and I guess it was an evil time for the chicken. And, you know, this is basically our trap. And it's the same way when our death falls suddenly or quickly upon them or upon us. It's just like getting caught in a trap unawares. It's sort of unawares because of not heeding the things that God has placed before us in our lives. And it says in 13, this wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. So, he says, Solomon says, this wisdom or this understanding have I seen or I witnessed, in 13, also under the sun or upon the earth, because that's interchangeable, and in Ecclesiastes it seems to be. Under the sun or upon the earth, and it seemed great unto me, and it appeared great unto him. So the wisdom that he's, this understanding that he has, and Solomon realized that God had give him a gift of understanding that most people didn't have. And he also had a gift to know things that were yet to come. And just like he knew his son, after his demise, his son was going to lose part of the kingdom of the children of God to somebody else. Okay, so verses 14 through 18 kind of goes together here. The rest of this chapter kind of goes together, and it seems to be something of what we would normally say in this day and age, maybe situational preaching or situational story. And it says this: there was a little city and few men within it. And there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. So, the little city was not named, and I guess it wasn't important, but it illustrates or it enlarges the many words that make this statement real. And it said, and few men, or few a few atoms. And there's a note on that subject in 14. And it goes on to list, you know, several things there because it's within the subject of the story here within it. And it was a few men within it or that made their dwelling or their abode there. And it says, continuing on with the story, and there came a great king. And here, the name was not found. There came a great king against it or in opposition and besieged it. And besieged there is 5437 in the Strong's. And it is in English the word Sobab, and it means to surround something or to surround it. And so he surrounded it and he built great bulwarks. And bulwarks there is another word that I had never looked up or seen, really. But it's 4685 in the Strong's, in the Hebrew. And that's, in English, it's, the best way I can say it is mezzo dog. And it is a tower type structure with a net used as a trap. And it was against, and that tower type thing with a net that would be probably thrown out or some way that it was thrown forward to trap the people that was within the city. And I guess to take them alive. But 15 says this, and there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. So, the plot thickens a little bit. It says, now or and, there someone was found, and he was certainly there. He wasn't lost in this city that was being besieged. He said he was poor but wise-ish. He was someone with a confident mind, someone that could think standing on his feet, even though he wasn't a wealthy person. You can be a good, competent, understanding person without having the earthly wealth that seems to be associated with people of power in this day and age. And so, even then, kind of the same way. And this Ish, by his wisdom or by his understanding, delivered or saved by this power the city. Doesn't say how he done it, but he did it by the fact that he knew how to.
Of his wisdom.
Yeah. And I always said that about my uncle. Occasionally when I was building my house, he'd come by, and he was a good carpenter. He filled Florida up with strip malls and stuff. And I always said he knew how to. You couldn't come up with some thing to talk about without him having a part within the conversation, you know.
He could tell you how to do it.
And it said, and yet none or no man remembered or could recall the man's name. The same poor man. And poor there is 45, 42 in the Strong's. And the word is miskin, indigent, needy, unfortunate. That's the kind of words that seems to follow the man that doesn't have wealth. He's the poor or in need. But quite often, just because a man is poor doesn't mean that he's not smart. You can be poor and be unfortunate, for sure. Verse 16, it says, then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his word is not heard. Now, this is what Solomon has seen in the course of his lifetime. Then said I, Solomon. Then Solomon said, "Yeah, wisdom. This chokmah is better than strength, is better than numbers that you can have. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom, his chokmah, is despised." And that word is bozal, and it means spoiled in Strong's. And his words are not heard, or at least they aren't heeded. So quite often, when a poor man speaks, and if he's not one of authority, people just don't listen. And quite often that can be bad. It says, nevertheless, his wisdom is despised. That is a bad thing. The words of wise men in 17, it says, are heard in quite more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. Again, Solomon is making making his thoughts come to life. The words of wise men are heard in quiet. In quiet there is 3183 in the Strong's. And that's knockoff. And it means to sink in. So the words of wise men are heard without shouting at them or without really making it sound like a law, an edict, or something that had to be done. It was in quiet, and it was able for people to allow it to sink in, to get the gist and the meaning of wise men. More than the cry of him that ruleth or reigns among or amid fools. So if you've got somebody, if you've got a king out there that's shouting this, that, and the other, or you got someone in authority is out there doing it without wisdom.
If he's, loud wisdom is better than loud ignorance, right?
Yeah, that's the way it works. Yeah, yeah. So that's good. That's
loud
good.
Loud foolishness.
Yeah. Then we get down to the last verse in the ninth chapter. It says, wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good. Again, this chokmah that he's talking about, this wisdom is better than the tools, the weapons, the tools of war. And, you know, if you think about it, quite often people jump in and want to do things their way and doesn't wait on wisdom to take advantage, but they just jump in and do things on their own. And he says, but one sinner, one that is without the wisdom of God, destroyeth much good. Because if he's the one doing the talking, and he doesn't have the knowledge of God, he can destroy much that has been said by the wise men that knows and has. So we get down to the personal inspections. We've gotten down now about halfway through. So we see that man's folly destroys what is good or what the good intentions were. If he doesn't heed and believe what God has said. And we find that here that as we start in the 10th chapter, that man's heart quite often betrays his folly. It's something that he just can't hide. And quite often we can see, and I've always said that if you see someone that's out there that's homeless, if he has the Lord in his heart, he may be down on his luck, and he may can't help the situation that he's in, but yet, you see him and you understand, you have that compassion that God gives you to help that individual because he may be in a situation where he cannot help himself. But then on the other hand, you see someone that's almost like that and you realize that the way that person has lived their life or that the way that they have conducted themselves is without God. And there's, you might be able to help him, but it's kind of doubtful that sometimes that you can. Because, you know, he's not going to stop and listen to you long enough for you to change his mind. That don't mean that we shouldn't try, but it means that, you know, first impressions mean something quite often. And it certainly does to me. But let's look at it. 10:1. It said, dead flies caused the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly. Him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. So there's a thing being used here to say that that sometimes man can stink like dead flies if he doesn't use his wisdom and knowledge and his honor. That it one can be like kind of like the other. Now the flies of death here are dead flies. They are flies that bring, can, or produce death, or as dead. So, evidently, if ointment is opened up to where the flies can get in, and quite often ointment deems a bug or a fly or whatever that gets involved there, it cannot get itself out of the situation. It's kind of like a trap within itself. So it says, dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth or give off a stinking savior. And certainly we have, in places in the world, we have flies that can bring death. The tsetse fly, the tsetse, you know. Their bites can be very bad. Can make the ointment of the apothecary. And I looked at that word apothecary, and I've seen it on pharmacies or drugstores.
When it mixes
the apothecary. Well, you know, and looking it up, apo means out from. You know, if you get and you look at your prepositions and things in the back of the book, you have a circle drawn, and these different words represents where they are within that, or to that circle, either. And apo means to move away from the edge of that circle, or whatever you are. So it is an outward motion going from that. And it means, apo means to carry off, to take away from, okay? To carry off or away from. So, it is, you know, if you break that down, apothecary, it is apo, A-P-O, and then T-H-E, and then the rest of that word is C-A-R-Y. And it means something that can carry the whatever it is away or carry it out.
Yeah.
Apothecary is, if you look at it as the Hebrew from the right back to the left, you know, you put the carry, you got to have, you know, if you've got ointment, if you've got something that that can be turned into a liquid or something like that, then you've got to have some way of keeping it together in a situation where you can work with it. And, of course, the salves and the ointment of the day of Solomon was things that was to be desired or maybe needed, and especially in the fact of burying someone or getting them ready for burial. So ointment can be one of many things, but I guess the savor that it sends forth would certainly stink if you got enough dead flies in it.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, if you allowed that to happen, that would be a folly on you. It would be something that you could have, taken care of, but didn't. And it says, "No doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor." So if somebody has a reputation for wisdom and honor, you wouldn't expect them to be carrying around any stinking ointment.
Well, I think the comparison is the dead flies mess up the ointment just like a little folly
messes up
somebody that has some reputation.
That has a reputation, yeah. Okay.
There's a kind of an ellipsis there.
Yeah.
It's a comparison.
Right. And it says in verse 2, "A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left." You ever wondered why you put your hand over your heart to make a pledge? You generally do it with your right hand. It don't matter if you're a southpaw. You know, you're not going to see anybody. You know, you're going to cross your chest with it. You're not going to see anybody do this.
Yeah, like this.
Yeah. So, a wise man heart, you know, he can, like he's going to grab it with his right hand. It says, "But a fool's heart is at his left." He's not going to make any pledges or do anything worth anything anyway, generally speaking. So that again is folly too, in that sense. And I think folly here is like, vanity.
Mm-hmm.
It falls in the same category.
Yeah.
Yea, also, it says in verse 3, "When he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, but he saith to everyone that he is a fool." So in verse 3, it says yea or yes also, or 2. "When he that is a fool and when there," you know, you consider that to be at the time, "he or Adam," that is a stupid person, a fool or a dullard, if you will, "walketh by that way," or the way, "his wisdom faileth him," or leaves him. "And he or it saith to everyone, his folly declareth itself, that he indeed is a fool. By the way a man walks." You know, God, and I went 3 years talking about walking.
Yeah.
About Yolak and Holak. Yolak is the way that God would have you to go. And Yolak and Holak is the word, the same word, as to how man wants to walk in his own way. And you can pretty much tell by, and we call it a manner of life today. We said, well, you know, his manner of life shows, you know, where he's going. And it shows where he's going to wind up if we, in other words, if, you know, if we're making a judgment to that effect.
It's kind of like you can't, the you can't hide stupid verse.
Yeah.
You
know by how foolish it is that it's not going to come out good.
Yeah.
You know, you can just see that it's, and I like to think about this, that a lot of times if you're down on the lake and somebody's been drinking and he's driving a boat, you can see him coming. You know he's not right.
Yeah.
And Lord, they're
out there.
So you better give him a lot of room. Yeah. Yeah.
Takes up a lot of lake.
Absolutely. And it does it in a hurry too. And it says in verse 4, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place. For yielding pacifieth great offenses. I scratched my head on that one a little bit, still do. And 4 and 5, and we're going to stop with this in 5, but it says, here we're talking about wisdom is better than power. The use of wisdom quite often is better than yielding power over someone. So it says, if the spirit, the ruach, if the invisible force of the ruler, if that you can't see him or can't know what his mind is involved in, and if this rises up against you or thee, then Solomon says, leave not thy place. Don't run. You know, quite often we see these things on television and they tell these people to get down, and they don't get down.
Anyway,
they turn around and run and things don't work out very good.
Exactly.
So it says, you know, don't move from where you are. Because it says yielding or giving in to the rule, giving in to this power that rises up against you is a kind of gentleness, because you have used your wit and your wisdom in gentleness against the rule of power, and that's what it says pacifieth. Pacify there. You know, I always think of a baby with a pacifier. But the number's 3240 in the Strong's, and the word is Yonak. So it has a God-given front part of that word. Like Yonak. Like where God sends you, or God tells you to stay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it means to deposit or allow to stay or to prevent greater offenses. Look at that last part of 4. It pacifies. It's like a deposit. If you take something to a bank to deposit it, you're putting it there and allowing it to stay until it is needed.
I think it's basically saying
preserved.
Yeah, yielding or giving in allows a great offense to stay.
Yeah. And the greater offense is kind of lessens the outrage that might come if you don't. I mean, if you run or you move to get away. If someone of power over you is telling you to do something and you see that it's not for you and you try to oppose that, then that's making things worse in a sense. Let's see five, because four and five went together. And it says this: there is an evil which I have seen under the sun as an error which proceedeth from the ruler. So you see, the ruler can make it worse. And he can make that spirit that rose up within him, it can make him do things worse by your actions or your not actions. And we're talking about these not actions here. And so Solomon says this: there is an evil, this Ra'ah, this good for nothing or naughtiness. Solomon says, which I, Solomon, have seen or witnessed under the sun or upon this earth as an error or a misjudgment which proceedeth or comes from the ruler or the one that is in power over you. And we'll stop there because my time is up for tonight, and we'll pick up with six and continue on and go on with 10. And but we've made pretty good progress on what we've looked at this afternoon. But this is Solomon's personal inspections, things that he's looked at and things that he has seen, and the fact that wisdom comes, and then from wisdom you have man. And quite often, man doesn't use the wisdom that Solomon's talking about here. And if you look in the structure here, you can see it. It goes right down on the companion side in page 917. You see wisdom man, right on down. Wisdom and man, and then it goes all the way down to the 15th verse of 10, which is not the end of the chapter, by the way, but quite a lot of the ninth chapter, and then pretty much the bigger part of the 10th chapter is taken up with these personal things that Solomon has seen being taking place, and how that man conducts himself, or at least should conduct himself because of it. And of course, back then they had the kings, and of course what the king said was the law. But we today, even in a democracy, we have those that are out there to uphold the law, and it kind of works the same way, that if you don't heed what is being said, then if you're foolish in that sense and you don't use the wisdom that God gave you, then you can wind up hurt or dead or in jail for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly that's none of those things are good. And so we need to understand that we are a nation of laws, and hopefully we need to abide by them. Sometimes it doesn't happen, but nevertheless, Solomon even gave his given his view upon the things that he had seen, even then, and realized that man creates his own problems lots of times.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Well, especially with God and God's word. Mm-hmm. But if it's a ruler's word, then, you know, because rulers are sometimes not good either. So that's just a situation. And man is, you know, even God's chosen people said, we want a king. You know, we won't be like other people. We want a king.
Cause their own problem.
And that didn't work out. It just didn't work out. Their king was not a good king. And many of the other kings after these guys were not a good king.
And this was after they decided more than once to either make their own god or adopt the false god of another nation.
Right. And that's the very thing that God abhorred.
Abhorred the most.
The most of anything. There be no other gods before me. So thank you for being with us again tonight. And I was a little slow about some of my thoughts tonight, but I really worked today. I'm getting my house re-roofed in the middle of the monsoon season.
Yeah.
But after 40 years, I'm kind of having to straighten up some of the things that I didn't do strong enough to begin with. And so the follies that overtook me then, at the age of 80, I'm having to pay for them. So, yeah, we all do have the follies. And the things that we think is going to last a lifetime, they just haven't yet. So God bless and pray for us, and we you each and every day, and that the Lord will give us the opportunity to continue. So thanks a lot.